Last month, we started a series of services about pivotal Unitarian and Universalist theologians with Hosea Ballou, that Universalist pioneer who preached that everyone deserves happiness and that all people go to heaven, not just a chosen few. Today, I will move to the Unitarian side of our heritage, to William Ellery Channing. Channing was the one who took the bull by the horns and proclaimed to the world that, yes, we are Unitarian and we have different ideas. He was the one who brought us out of the theological closet. Up until his ordination sermon, Unitarian Christianity, given in 1819, we were part of the Congregational Church, the liberal wing of it, to be sure. There was no creed, but of course there were assumptions about what you believed if you belonged. The debate was public, conducted in the pulpit and in the newspapers of the day. Various ministers and even whole congregations, though, held that God was one and that humans were inherently good, not evil, no original sin, and that you didn't need a creed to be Christian. King's Chapel, the first Episcopal church established in Boston, published a Unitarian version of the Common Book of Prayer. That was in 1785. It ordained its own minister a couple years later. They wanted the right one, which, of course, is not the usual thing for an Episcopal church to do. So the Anglican Church of England kicked them out. Many ministers and churches shied away from the controversy, quietly preaching and living a moderate version of liberal Christianity. A 1795 hymnal omitted all references to the Trinity, and Trinitarian doxologies disappeared. David Bumbaugh writes that in 1800, of the 20 churches in Plymouth County, Massachusetts, 18 were, quote, infected with liberalism. 8 of the 9 churches in Boston were unsound on the doctrine of the Trinity. Harvard College, the seminary for the Boston ministers, was the hotbed of controversy. In 1803, its leading professor died. Who should replace him, a liberal or a conservative? It took a year for a new professor to be named. And yes, he was a liberal. So the conservatives on this board of the college quit. And, of course, they were replaced by liberals. Now, what would the conservatives do to provide for a suitable seminary for their ministers? They opened Andover Theological College in what is now another suburb of Boston. And it's interesting to note that our own Unitarian Universalist Meadville Lombard Theological College is this very year in the process of amalgamating with who? Andover Newton Theological College, to be based ultimately in Newton, at their campus. It's tough times all around in the seminary business, I guess, making for previously unlikely bedfellows. Most of the ministers, though, tried to stay out of the controversy. They didn't like to use that word Unitarian, because they didn't think they were Unitarians. They're shades of differences we won't go into. They called themselves liberal Christians or rational Christians. They called upon people to be open and tolerant of varying opinions. One of their strongest opponents claimed that Unitarians were deliberately concealing their ideas and were working to spread their beliefs secretly. This opponent wanted the liberals to get out of his church. The controversy did bring the liberals together, though, and they got organized finally. So it was quite deliberately that Channing set out the manifesto. This is who we are. This is what we believe. This is 1819. In a sermon that lasted an hour and a half, he declared that Unitarianism is indeed scriptural when interpreted by reason and conscience. The Bible is literature, he says, metaphor and poetry, not science. It is of its time, that is, set in history at a particular time in a particular place, written by a particular group of people. We would, of course, he expects, interpret situations differently today. For Channing, the single most important aspect of religion is the use of reason as a tool for life. Everything else derives from this core assumption. Reason was, after all, he says, given by God to us for our use. Channing then lists some of the beliefs that struck the Orthodox as heresies. He proclaims the unity of God against the prevailing idea of the Trinity. He likewise affirms the unity of Jesus against the notion of his dual nature as both God and human. Jesus is held to be the greatest of all human teachers, a moral paragon, certainly unique, but less than supernatural. Channing's God is revealed to be a loving parent, not a stern judge or a jealous tyrant. Against the ideas of complete depravity, original sin, and predestination, Channing stresses human goodness and the inherent moral discernment that preclude any need for irresistible grace from God. Finally, Channing proclaims the Unitarian beliefs in tolerance, open-mindedness. Channing is convinced that revivalistic enthusiasms degrade the virtues of authentic piety. We need some background here. Some context of the times. 1819 is in the middle of the Great Awakening, that revivalistic movement of a most ecstatic kind. It was the very opposite of how Channing and his colleagues believed and worked. These revivalists included the Universalists and were, for the most part, not the educated upper and middle class folks who attended the Boston churches we're talking about. Channing's own life story was one of struggle with emotions and passions. His father was a strict disciplinarian at home and wasn't very close to William. Channing's mother was, quote, chillingly severe. So Channing was a grave and reflective boy, taken to lonely rambles on the beach. Now, he lived in Newport, Rhode Island. There's lots of beaches there. When he was 13, his father, a lawyer, died, and the family was forced to live in genteel poverty. At 15, he entered Harvard College, living with an uncle to save on the costs. At 18, he became a tutor for a wealthy Virginia slave owner's children. He engaged in both instruction of the children and study, reading and preparation for entry to Harvard Divinity School. He worked himself very hard, and in addition was tormented by sexual fantasies and what he called his effeminacy. He worked until 2 or 3 in the morning and sometimes slept on the floor, springing up at any hour to toughen his heart, as he put it. Channing experimented with his diet and did not exercise. He broke his body. His aesthetic practices broke down his immune system, and he was infirm for the rest of his life. Channing wrote about his emotional turmoil. He says, quote, "My whole life has been a struggle with my feelings. Last winter, I thought myself victorious. I repeat it, my whole life has been a struggle with my feelings. Ask those with whom I have lived, and they will tell you I am a Stoic. I almost thought so myself. But I only remember a fire which will one day consume me. I sigh for tranquil happiness. I have long wished that my days might flow along like a gentle stream which fertilizes its banks and reflects in its clear surface the face of heaven. But I can only wish it. I still continue sanguine, ardent, and inconsistent. I can still remember the days when I glorified in the moments of rapture, when I loved to shroud myself in the gloom of melancholy. You may remember them too. But I have grown wiser as I have grown older. I now wish to be in the world. I must throw away the ridiculous ecstasies and form myself to habits of piety and benevolence." Channing was convinced that reason and judgment should prevail, and could prevail. You may remember that Ballou, the Universalist, preached that we are both mind and body, that emotions are a part of life. There is a witticism about the differences between Unitarians and Universalists. Thomas Starr King, a prominent Californian Unitarian minister, said it about 1860. Being on the West Coast, perhaps he felt it was okay to make fun of the earnestness of his Boston colleagues. King was asked to describe the differences between Unitarians and Universalists. The Universalists hold that God is too good to damn them. That's the universal salvation piece. And then he added, Unitarians believe they are too good to be damned. I've heard that too. Contemporary theologian Thendaika sums up Channing. Channing espoused a doctrine that in contemporary terms could be called a doctrine of the split self, a mind at war with its body's own self-acknowledged sentiments. Ballou and Channing had running theological debates in the papers. Debate on the place of reason and motion in our services and in our faith continues to this day. Is a proper service like unto a lecture? Or are the stories and emotional responses appropriate content? Channing's Church of Reason is more than quaint history. It is our reality still. The Unitarians and Universalists merged very nearly 50 years ago now, in 1961. Some people see the distinctions fading as those who are either one or the other before that either retire or die off. Perhaps these distinctions are fading. Thanks to Channing, though, we believe that we can improve our character. It is a divine mandate. We are not destined to go to hell just because we are. We are perfectible. We are moral. Channing's work sold widely, and he converted a lot of people. He gave the middle class a religion that affirmed what they knew: progress, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as a rational, sacred, even political right. According to Channing, quote, our true happiness has its seat in the mind which God has breathed into us, and in the enlargement of its powers, in the elevation of its sentiments, in the firmness and purity of its principles, in its ascent to its native heaven. In other words, we are able to figure out how to be better people, so we ought to do so. It is our moral duty and the way in which we approach perfection, sometimes known as God. Amen.